And now let's join Mr. Peabody and his boy Sherman for a time trip in the Wayback Machine. That's a Rocky and Bullwinkle reference, but anywho, today we're headed to the 1960s and 70s when a group of educators and students undertook an experiment in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. For some, it was an attempt at utopia, but for others, mostly outsiders, it was an unwelcome outpost for the counterculture of the time. New Hampshire Public Radio's Robert Garova takes us back to Franconia College, the state's liberal arts sanctuary that's all but lost to time.
Open the house.
Rain clouds are just starting to roll in over the White Mountains near Franconia, New Hampshire, and Chris Brooks is leading me through saplings and overgrown grass. We're trying to find a trace of the buildings that once stood here.
It's almost hallucinogenic when I come in here.
Really?
Because it doesn't look like anything I remember.
Brooks spent about 8 years of his life at this spot, first as a student and later as a teacher at what was then known as Franconia College. The school attracted about 400 students at its height.
Where would have been the building? There's this great, you know, picture of all the college kids.
Sitting on the roof in the balcony?
Yeah.
And the portico there?
Yeah.
That was the main building. That's what I've been trying to find for you.
The story goes, the town of Franconia wanted to do something with a decaying old hotel called the Forest Hills. The once popular resort was starting to become a bit of an embarrassment, so town leaders decided to turn it into a college. Students helped fix up the place and attended class in rooms filled with leftover hotel furniture.
It was Hippieville, and we disdained all forms of formality and conventionality.
There were co-ed dormitories and organic gardens. Students had representation in educational policy decisions. They built their own dormitories and radio stations. But most of that is long gone now. There isn't even a marker to let passersby know what was here.
This was a beacon for everything that was happening in the 60s. History vanished and we became, simply for a few years, Franconia College. Not really bound by time or space, just its own unusual entity.
Just like the music from that era, I think Franconia was an optimistic response to a very threatening time.
Keith Talbot was a student at Franconia College in the 1960s. He went on to work at NPR, where he pioneered a new kind of radio. He says that work was inspired, in some ways, by the intersectional education he got at Franconia.
Franconia was like, wow, an entirely new interpretation of the world, and it seemed like that was sorely needed at that point, the war raging. Most kids were there to get away from that world, to examine that world, maybe even to create a better world.
This has turned out to be a very important college, a very important situation in American movement towards art and literature. Amazing, it is.
Peter Bradley is an artist. He's also known for organizing what's considered one of America's first racially integrated art exhibitions. And he taught painting at Franconia College in the early 70s. Bradley says it was Leon Botstein, then president of Franconia and current head of Bard College, who gave him the job. He says Franconia was a special place.
I felt all energy because of the atmosphere and the climate. It was unreal. The winters were incredible.
For several people I spoke with, the seclusion, the dark nights, and the freedom were a welcome respite to the turmoil of the time. The battle for civil rights in America, race tensions, the Vietnam War. Students felt they could regain control of their lives, at least for a little while, at Franconia. By the late 60s, though, people outside the boundaries of campus began to voice concerns about how students and faculty were affecting the area. Former student Keith Talbot recorded part of a community meeting from 1968. In the scratchy audio, you can hear the college president at the time describe a conversation with 10 members of the Franconia Chamber of Commerce who were signaling they wanted the college to close.
We were asked some questions. The questions had to do with bare feet. Students who smell bad because they don't bathe often enough. Long hair. And certainly the whole aura of moral degradation was strong.
Talbot and other students had come to Franconia to escape the turmoil of the time, but they couldn't keep the world at bay forever. Back at the site of the former college, Chris Brooks remembers what he calls the beginning of the end for the school. State police conducted a raid on the campus, and then the New Hampshire paper The Union Leader ran a story.
And it's a famous headline. You can see it online. Bare debauchery at Franconia College.
But below the Franconia news, there was another headline. this one having to do with the national news of April 5th, 1968.
It's a noted civil rights leader slain. It's Martin Luther King's assassination. It's on the same front page.
The college continued on, and so did the negative press. There was more pushback from local officials and financial trouble. Franconia eventually closed its doors in 1978.
Now it's passed on to the realm of the mythological.
There is a Facebook group, though, where Brooks keeps up with fellow alumni and faculty. Most physical remnants have long since rotted away. But Brooks never left New Hampshire, and others didn't either. Former students would go on to become state senators, open local bookshops, and found companies that still exist in the Franconia area. Brooks says Franconia College gave a sleepy town with a past, a future. For Here and Now, I'm Robert Garova.